This is Nachyomi, Sefer Shofetim, chapter 11. In this chapter, we are introduced to Yiftach HaGiladi. Yiftach HaGiladi was the illegitimate son of a man of Gilad, who perhaps was also named Gilad himself. Gilad was a part of the tribe of Menashe. Now, because Yiftach was illegitimate, he was born from a woman who was not married to his father. Therefore, when his stepbrothers, when his father's other sons became of age, they kicked him out of the house. They did not want him around because they didn't want him to inherit together with them and have a portion in their father's estate, since he wasn't a legitimate child. Yiftach leaves home and establishes himself in another area as the ancient equivalent of a successful mob boss. He's some kind of gang leader who has a group of people around him that work for him, that are employed by him, that are directed by him. He's a great organizer, but he's not connected to the political infrastructure of Israel and even has no relationship with his own family. In this context, Ammon has been threatening to attack the Jewish people and seeking to recapture territory that it lost hundreds of years prior to this incident. Now, what happened was that Sihon, Melech Cheshbon, had defeated Ammon in battle all the way back then, even prior to the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, and had taken and annexed some of the Ammonite territory. When the Jews entered into their conflict with Sihon, which was when Sihon, the king of Cheshbon, tried to prevent them from passing through his land. They wanted to get to the Jordan River so they could cross over to the land of Israel. Sihon felt threatened and so therefore went out and attacked them. The Jewish people defeated Sihon, took his land, and amongst that land was included some areas that Sihon had taken, that the Amorim had taken from the people of Ammon. So now the king of Ammon, seeing that the Jews are very weak and very vulnerable, is demanding land back. Now this land was never taken by the Jews from Ammon. This land was taken by the Emori from Ammon. But now they see the opportunity to regain it. So therefore, they are threatening the Jewish people with battle, and the Jewish people are in a very weak position. Now Yiftach is approached by the elders of Gilad, ironically, because he's been exiled, kicked out of his own family, and alienated. But they say, listen, we need your organizational skills. We need your management skills. You've got to lead us. You've got to help us. Yiftach is very hesitant to accept this kind of an offer, but in the end, he does. He says, listen, here's my condition. If I succeed, if I am able to lead you and to triumph over Ammon, and we are able to win this battle, to win this war, then I will get to be permanently a leader over all of you. I will become, for all intents and purposes, the king of Israel. A solemn agreement to these terms is made in the presence of Hashem. The elders accept this condition. So Yiftach is now poised to become the undisputed leader of the Jewish people by virtue of his success in this battle. Now, before engaging in a physical battle, Yiftach tries to resolve the problem through diplomacy. He sends a messenger to the king of Ammon and puts the conflict in its historical context. He says, listen, originally this land belonged to you. You lost it fair and square to the Emori. When we got involved in our battle with the Emori, which was unprovoked, incidentally, they came after us, we were fortunate enough and blessed that Hashem enabled us to beat one of the most formidable kings in the region at the time, the other one being Og Melech HaBashan, but we beat Sihon through divine assistance and we captured his land. Now, some of that land had originally belonged to you, but you had lost it fair and square to the Emori prior to this, and you never tried to get it back from them, nor did Moab ever try to get any of the land that we annexed to Israel, that we acquired in these wars against Sihon and Og that had originally belonged to them. They realized they had lost some of their land to these kings in the past, and now we took that same land and it became part of Israel, and there's no beef between the Jewish people and Moab. There's no beef between the Jewish people and Ammon. The issue between Ammon and Sihon, or Ammon and the Emori, is a different issue. It's not our issue. Hashem gave us this land. This land had already been captured by a different country before it came into our hands. So therefore, Yiftach says that since our God blessed us and gave us this land, we're entitled to keep it. We didn't take it from you. We didn't steal it from you. Somebody else did. And if your God had given you a piece of territory, we wouldn't ask you to relinquish it to us just because many, many, many years ago it originally belonged to us. All's fair in love and war, says Yiftach. Now the king of Ammon is not impressed with these diplomatic attempts, and he proceeds to attack anyway. Before leaving home, Yiftach makes what turns out to be a very fateful declaration, a vow to God. He says, if I return in peace, then the first thing that comes out of my house will be consecrated as a sacrifice to Hashem. Yiftach, of course, successfully beats Ammon, and joyfully heads home the victor in battle. Unfortunately, the first thing to come out of his home when he comes home is not a sheep, not a goat, not a bull, but his own one and only daughter, who is now condemned as a result of the vow to become an offering to God. Yiftach is hesitant, is actually at first devastated and then very hesitant to follow through with his promise, but his daughter insists that he do what he promised to do in view of the fact that Hashem helped him in this war and enabled him to achieve what he set out to achieve. She just asks that she have the opportunity to go with her friends for 2 months to the mountains to cry over the loss of her virginity. In other words, the fact is that she was never married. She never was able to have children. After this grace period, Yiftach fulfills his vow, but it became an annual tradition for Jewish women to mourn for the daughter of Yiftach 4 days a year. Now, it's interesting to consider how the social status of the judges of Israel continues to decline. Gid'on was a reformed idolater. Avimelech was his illegitimate offspring, but an illegitimate offspring that came from a pilegesh, from a concubine. Yiftach is a gang leader, essentially, who was actually the son of a prostitute, not even a concubine, and was rejected by his family. This certainly reflects, in a way, the general decline of the Jewish people. Hashem, by selecting these unsavory characters, or dishonorable characters, if you will, as leaders, is conveying the message that while he helps them, while he supports them, there's some reservation in the support. He's not sending them the most illustrious heroes to provide the salvation that they request. So that seems to indicate a general decline. Now, the oath of Yiftach is a fascinating subject in its own right that is debated among the Mefarshim. The commentaries grapple with how he could possibly have offered his daughter as a sacrifice to God. Some of the commentators do take it literally that he did so. It's difficult to accept this because such a ritual would go against everything the Torah tells us. It's certainly against Jewish principles and Jewish tradition. We never hear of any such thing as human sacrifice in our culture. And moreover, the Pesukim, the verses, do not seem to describe a sacrifice. They don't use the word like Vayishchat, that he slaughtered her, or anything that would speak to, that would convey to us the horror of this kind of action. More appealing from a textual standpoint and also from a contextual standpoint is the idea that giving her to God means that she had to commit to a lifetime of celibacy. In other words, she would remain a virgin the rest of her life. This would explain why she mourned over her virginity. In other words, in a way, she was sacrificing herself to God because she would never be able to be married, to have children, or to have a future. So in that way, she is sacrificing something very important to her, to Hashem. Now, in the next chapter, we're going to see what the implications of this choice were for Yiftach's political career. On the surface, it just seems like a personal tragedy, but I believe that there's more to it than that. In the meantime, it's interesting to note also Yiftach's relationship to Judaism. On one hand, he invokes the name of Hashem quite a lot. For a gang leader and a mob boss who has been exiled from his community and from his family, he seems to be particularly inclined to mention God. On the other hand, his conception of religion is a bit distorted. On one hand, you know, he's very ambitious. He wants to be the king, despite his seedy past, despite his other problems. He wants to be the king, and he considers the possibility of one kind or another of human sacrifice. He thinks that a vow is inviolable, cannot be canceled. There's no way to work with it or to approach it reasonably. But rather, he takes it in an absolute sense that he must sacrifice his daughter. And either her or her virginity, as if he has that kind of power over her. His Judaism seems kind of tainted, if anything, by the culture of the time, by certain idolatrous ideas, or maybe some of the mores of the ancient Near East. So that kind of, again, speaks to a general decline in the level of Torah understanding, even among the leadership of Israel, even among those that we count as shofatim, as judges, as role models. We see a lack of understanding of authenticity in their Judaism. So if that's the case for them, we can assume that it's even worse. It's declined even further amongst the general population.